Well, once again, I bid you a very pleasant good morning and say to all of you how thankful we are to have you this morning. We do have a number of guests with us, and we're certainly glad that you've chosen to come and be with us, and we hope that you will come back at each and every opportunity that you have. We have today some of our college students who have returned. I believe that's because school is about ready to start, and we have some new college students in our audience as well today. I know the McKeevers are here, and they're from the Tuscaloosa area, and their daughter Macy will be in school here. We're glad to have them this morning, as well as others who are here among us. So we hope that you will make your plans to be with us on a regular basis. If you are, we'll meet each Lord's Day, and we'll meet on Wednesday evenings, and we'll have other opportunities to meet as well. So we hope that you will certainly make your plans to be with us, and we hope that our time spent together, all of the time, is beneficial to us spiritually. That's what we're always seeking to do. I have been in Oakland for the past week. Beth and I went over there every day, every night, really, for our meeting with the Oakland Church, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. We were there. That was a Sunday through Friday meeting. I don't do many Sunday through Friday meetings anymore. They're usually Sunday through Wednesday or Friday through Sunday, but we enjoyed that. We spent a little extra time there this week and enjoyed being with those folks, and then we were over there yesterday for two funerals. So our car knows how to get to Athens, Alabama, for sure. But we're glad to be back with you. I appreciate Bobby and Drew speaking last week. When I'm away, I know that there are many who are willing to step in and speak, and I want all of them to know how appreciative I am, and I know how appreciative you are for the good work which they did, and I'm confident you gained a great deal from their lessons. We're blessed here. We have a number of men who can stand before a group like this and speak and deliver the message of God, and I'm grateful for all of those who are willing to do that. I want you to look with me this morning as we think about the idea of building a legacy as a parent. You know, this a legacy worth following is our theme this year, as we all well know. And each month I try to present a lesson or two that relates to some aspect of our lives where we want to build a legacy. And when we talk about parenting, I'm just going to tell you, it's always a stepping on toes. I don't know any parent that ever listens to a sermon or hears a class or thinks about parenting and they don't leave not feeling real good about themselves. I'm not presenting this lesson this morning because I want to make you feel bad. I'm presenting this lesson because I want to make us more aware of the responsibility that we have and more aware of the kind of parent we ought to be when we think about what God wants from us. So that's really the purpose of this lesson this morning. And I begin with this verse, this passage that's very familiar to us from Deuteronomy 6. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart and with all of your soul and with all of your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand. They shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. I've thought about that, and I've preached from this text a lot through the years. I went back earlier this week and looked and read some different translations. The NIV says, you are to impress them on your children. When you think about what we're trying to do, this idea of teach them diligently, that's the idea really of impressing them on your children. Now, I don't often do this, but we're going to have audience participation today. I want everybody to take your left hand. I'm not going to call you out if you don't do it. But I want you to take your left hand. I want you to put your right thumb in that fatty part of your palm. And I want you to press down and hold it. Everybody doing that? Some of you can do it without looking at it. That's impressive. That's impressive. I just want you to know. Now I want you to take it out quickly. Do you see that impression that was there? Did you notice that? That's the idea that Moses is trying to get across to the children as God is saying to him, this is what I want you to do. I want you to teach my laws and my commandments to your children so that you make that impression upon them so that when you leave, the impression is still there. I love that. I love that idea. So Moses teaches us to leave a lasting impression. So I'm going to suggest to us today that what this is about is that we need to leave a legacy. We need to leave something that's there that they can recall, that they can grab hold of, that they can look at and see and say, this is who we are. We make impressions daily. That's his point when he talked about this. He talked about the idea of sitting in our house and walking by the way and lying down and when you rise. And he said, that's a responsibility that all of us who are parents have. We have that responsibility to engage in that daily. Every day, that's what happens. It's finally dawned on me. That's why parenting's so hard. That's why you're so tired at the end of the day when you're a parent. Because you've had to work at that. Just working at what he encourages the children of Israel to do. You teach them diligently. You impress those things upon your children. And when you do that on a regular, daily basis, which is what he wants, that's hard. That'll wear you out physically. That'll wear you out emotionally. And so those of you who, even this morning as you sit in this assembly, you're wrangling kids. You're taking them in and out. You're trying to get them to behave and to be quiet. Man, I appreciate you. I want you to know, man, I love you. I appreciate you. You know, somebody says, Kenny, why do you preach? And I say, well, I preach because during church when our kids were small, I didn't want to have to take care of them. I let Beth do that. And fortunately, she had like a lot of you. She had a lot of folks in the assembly that would help her. But you know, it's hard. And I appreciate and value those of you who are trying to be this kind of parent and to leave this kind of legacy with your children. Well, why must we do this as parents? Why is it that we do this? Let me call your attention to this passage. This is Psalm 127. This is the passage which Eli read for us as we began our service this morning. The psalmist says, behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. Happy is the man who has his quiver full of them. When you're a parent, parenting's not punishment. Parenting's a reward. And I know those who have children are grateful for what God has given. And like arrows in the hand of a warrior. Another title of this sermon might be How to Shoot Your Kids, but that's not politically correct. But the idea is that we want to help them and we want to give them an opportunity to grow really spiritually. That's what we're talking about. So I want you to think with me this morning just about a few things that relate to this idea of leaving a legacy as a parent. I just want to mention three or four points to you this morning as we consider some of these things. The first thing I would say is you need to commit to the process. So whatever it is that God has encouraged and instructed parents to do, those of us who are parents need to be committed to that. We need to use, in essence, the weapons that God has given us. You know, every soldier or law enforcement officer will tell you, you know, when you're thinking about how you're going to use that, the idea is you don't draw your weapon unless you have a full intent that you're willing to use that weapon if you draw that weapon. If you're not prepared to use it, don't draw it. Be prepared to follow through. And I think the same is true of our children. They are arrows. And I would suggest to you that, I'm going to say this to you as carefully as I can, and it's really too late for a lot of you who already have children. If you don't want to shoot those arrows the way God intends, then you ought not have children. I'm just going to say it to you as plainly as I know how. If you're not going to treat those children the way God intends, you ought not have children. Now, I'm going to suggest something to you. There's a side note. Good parents don't always mean that you're going to have good kids. I'll tell you how quickly you can find that in the Bible. You turn over to about the second chapter. The first two kids God had rebelled against him. And once they figured out what it was that they were supposed to do, they had kids, and one of those kids killed the other kid. Now, how about that? How about that for the kind of parenting that we want to do? Or think about David's family. Here is a man after God's own heart. His family was pretty much a disaster. He had 19 sons. Three of those were Absalom, Amnon, and Adonijah. And you go back and look at some of their actions, and it's not too good, folks. In 1 Kings 1, we're told that Adonijah wanted to be king. Solomon had already been designated as the one who was going to follow his father. Yet Adonijah wanted to be king. He was self-proclaimed. He had decided that's what he wanted to do. And 1 Kings 1:6 says this: David had never rebuked Adonijah. That doesn't say that David did it occasionally when he thought. He said he never rebuked Adonijah. He may have been too busy. It may just not have been something he wanted to do. But David should have said, "No, Adonijah, you're not going to do that. You got to do better. God wants you to do better. Your mother and I want you to do better. Everybody who loves you wants you to do better. And I'm rebuking you for what you're thinking and what you're doing." And yet, Scripture records that David had never rebuked Adonijah. I know that David was a man after God's own heart. I want to tell you, I struggle sometimes with what that means. Sometimes I think he was after it. That's what he was trying to get to. But he struggled. And if you want kids, and you have kids, and you need to be committed to the process. You need to decide right up front before you have them. I know what it's going to take. I know it's going to take some time, and I'm committed to doing that like God wants me to do that. It's not easy, but it is essential. It is essential. So you need to commit to it. It's going to take you a while. It's going to take you a long while. And as I'm finding out through the years, it's one of those deals that's just never over. It just keeps going and going. That's not a problem in some ways, because you're always wanting to have that kind of influence on your children, but you have to commit to that process. And some people I have found are unwilling to do that. They don't want to do that. Now, let me tell you something. You're way past, "I don't want to do that." You should have thought that a long time ago if you don't want to do it. And then I want to suggest this: we need to provide the direction. An arrow's flight goes where it is aimed. I want to share a proverb with you that I had never seen. I want to share this with you because it to me is the point. Man, I mean, no pun intended since we're talking about arrows, to me this just speaks volumes about what we ought to be doing as parents. Listen to this, Proverbs 19:18. This is the NIV. "Discipline your children, for in that there is hope. Do not be a willing party to their death." I'm working on a sermon. It's called "Do Not Be a Willing Party." I love this verse. I don't love it because of what it says. I love it because of what, if I'm not careful, I love it because it just stares me in the face. Let me ask you a sobering question. Have you, as a parent, become a willing party to your child's spiritual demise? I want you to think about it. If you don't instruct, if you don't train, if you don't provide direction, you have. You basically have become a willing party to their death. Think about that. That's what that proverb is saying to us. And on top of that, part of that is you need to discipline. I mean, David should have read that a little bit stronger. You should have heard that a little bit more. Discipline your children. In that there is hope. If you're unwilling to do that, and I think it's in a broad sense, it's saying if you're unwilling to discipline those children, you're a willing party to their demise, to their death. And may I say this to all of us? I think I can answer this for every single person here. We don't want that. We don't want that to be our legacy. We want to help them. We want to help them socially. We want to help them emotionally. We want to help them physically. We want to help them intellectually. Don't we? And may I ask, don't we want to help them spiritually? Why wouldn't we want to help them in the area that is the most important area? Many of you remember this. Well, let me say it to you this way. What's more important? What's more important to you as a parent, G-O-D or G-P-A? What's more important to you as a parent, G-O-D or M-V-P? I think that says it pretty directly. And I'm just going to tell you, I think we struggle with that sometimes. I think for many of us as parents, we struggle with these three letters. Which is more important? Joshua would say this in Joshua 24. If it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your father served, which are on the other side of the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. You know, what I see in this, when I read this, I see a father. Who, like all parents, probably is struggling. Yeah, he's a pretty well-known figure in the Old Testament. We certainly know that. But when all these other things were trying to take precedent, and all these other people and their cultures are trying to take precedent, Joshua made that decision. And he wanted those other Israelites to make that same decision. And what he said, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. I find that an interesting comment. I find that interesting because of this. A man can't say that, make a demand to his family, and everybody in that family do it. Man can't do that. He can't do it. Joshua wasn't saying, but as for me and my house, every single one of us are going to serve the Lord. I don't believe that's what he's saying. I believe what he's saying is, as much as in me lieth as the head of this house, this is the direction that we're going to go. As for me and my house, those who are part of my house, those who are part of my responsibility, our goal is to obviously serve the Lord. And we're going to do that to the very best of our ability. This is a prose by Dorothy Law Nolte. You know, some of you have crocheted this. Some of you bought this and you've got it on a plaque or in some placard in your house probably. I can remember as a boy we had this. Children learn what they live. And I didn't always pay attention to it, but as I got older, I started watching it and started thinking about it and listening to it. I didn't watch it. If children live with criticism, they learn to condemn. If they live with hostility, they learn to fight. If they live with ridicule, they learn to feel shy. Live with shame, feel guilty. And on it goes. And what it says is children tend to replicate what they see. They replicate what they see. So let me ask you a few questions this morning. Do you value excellence in your home? Do you take pride in not cutting corners? Do you work hard to achieve? Do you give your best effort? Are you self-disciplined and are you industrious? Do you not quit when the going gets tough? Listen, those are questions that I think our children see answers to when they see us as parents. And I would suggest this, if you can say, that's what I do, that's what my children see, then I think there's a pretty good chance that your children are going to follow that kind of lead. If they see you value spiritual things, that's an excellent start. But if you don't, let me suggest this. If you don't value those spiritual things, what you will be doing is you will become a willing party to their demise. And getting back for just a moment to this idea that I mentioned in a previous slide, I really had my slides kind of crossed here. Which would you prefer? Your child be the best athlete in school or be the best Christian he or she can be? Honestly. Honestly, how you feel about that? Well, would you want your kid to be the absolute best athlete that's ever been at this high school and maybe become the greatest, most well-known athlete in the history of athletics? Would you rather have that, or would you rather them be the best disciple of Jesus Christ that they can be? And what are you doing about that? That's back to those goals for Joshua. He said, this is what I'm going to do. Now, let me slow down just a minute. And I want to get kind of practical. Because I'm guilty of some of this. I wanted my kids to be the MVP. And I wanted my kids to have the best GPA. Now, I was a little bit better about the MVP than I was the GPA. But if I stand in this pulpit and I tell you that I didn't have some of those goals for my kids, I'd be lying to you. And I'd be lying to you if I said that my own parents didn't have some of those goals for me, their only son. My dad wanted the same for me. My dad wanted me to develop as an athlete. He wanted me to have those skills. And I'm grateful that as I grew up, there were a lot of times on that hill above our house, we turned on that light and we played basketball on top of that hill till the wee hours of the morning. And we did that an awful lot. And I'm grateful for that because that paid for my college education. Those hours eventually paid off for me. But I can promise you this. Playing ball on the top of the hill behind my house never took Preston over God. Never took Preston over God. If there was ever any issue in my household when I was a boy as to whether or not God was more important than sports, I always understood what was more important. There was never a doubt in my mind. They saw to it that that was the case. And I didn't always like it. And sometimes I expressed it. And I learned not to express it. But eventually I learned to change what I thought. Because that's what I ought to do. Now let me practicalize this another step further. All my kids play travel ball. To a lot in this audience, you know what travel ball is. That's where you put your kids on teams and they travel. I'll tell you what travel ball was for me when I grew up. I traveled across town on Saturday morning and played in the neighbor's yard, and I came home Saturday night. That was travel ball back when I was in school. Nowadays, travel ball is you get on a plane with your team and you spend a kajillion dollars to have your son or your daughter go somewhere on the other side of the world and play sports all summer. Now, that's a little bit extreme. My kids played. Beth and I made a decision. And this was probably more my decision than hers, although we haven't really had that conversation. But we made a decision. If there are some opportunities for them to play in sports and play some travel ball, we wanted them to do that. When I preached, there were a lot of Sundays that I wasn't the one taking them. She was the one taking them. But I can tell you this. When we took them, the question never was, are we going to church on Sunday? The question was, where are we going to church on Sunday? I'm not suggesting to you that we were perfect in that, by any means. I'm not suggesting to you, by any means, that there weren't some tough decisions. I'm not suggesting in any kind of way that there weren't times when I was sitting there looking at the schedule and listening to the coach say, we need to start Bradley in this game. He needs to pitch first three innings of this game because this will set us up for this. If I told you that I'm trying to weigh when are we going to get to church and when are we going to play ball? If I told you that that was always easy, I would be lying to you. And I would be lying to you if I said, I always made the right decision and it was always easy. But the question never was, are we going to bypass it to play ball? There may have to be some adjustments made with the team or with the schedule, and we had to sometimes simply say, he just can't be there, coach. But the spiritual priority, in my mind, was never compromised. I think that's about the best way I can say that. Now, that's getting right to the heart of it. And I'll tell you, I wanted my kids to be the best athletes they could be. I wanted to play against the best, and I wanted them to be the best. And while they weren't the best, I tried to put them in environments where they could try to excel, especially athletically. So you talking to somebody who gets it, who understands it. But as somebody who's on the other side of it, just be careful. Do not leave the wrong impression. Do not. Some people might say, well, you know, I don't think I should force my son or daughter to go to church. They need to make up their own mind. I've had people say, you know, well, the reason I know they're living at home, but the reason I don't make them go to church is I think it's time for them to make up their own mind. Do you do that? Do you do that when they look at you when they're 14 and say, I don't think I want to go to school today? What do you do? Okay, roll over. And when you wake up, you play those video games. Mom will come home and fix you something to eat and go back to bed. That's good. How often do you want to do that? You don't miss half of school? Is that what you've decided? Is that what you've let your kids decide? You let a 14-year-old decide, I don't think I'm going to come home tonight. I think I'm going to stay out all night. Okay. That sounds like a good idea to me. Is that what you do? You let your kids decide whether or not they're going to smoke, whether or not they're going to drink, or as we like to say when I was in school, are you going to smoke, drink, or cuss? That's the way we dealt with it. Why don't you just let them decide? Why don't you at 12 years old say, you're about to be a teenager, you're about to turn 13, you decide what it is that you want to do. Is that how we parent? Nobody parents like that. Even bad parents don't parent that bad. We don't leave all decisions up to them. And if we do, folks, I want to tell you who what we are. We are a willing party to their death. That verse just shoots an arrow through my heart when I see that verse. We are a willing party if we do those kind of things. But let me go to this. We need to aim for the targets. Luke 2:52. You remember that passage we talk about all the time? Jesus was increasing in wisdom and stature and favor with God and man. I think that idea is really about balance. I love these verses that talk about balance. He increased in stature. He grew up. Physically grew up. Everybody in this audience has got marks on the door frame of where you, as your kids were growing up. You want them to grow up. You want that to happen. The Lord was a young man. He was a teenager. He was growing in all those areas. And he was growing because his parents, like those of us who are parents, they wanted him to achieve certain abilities, no doubt about that. And he grew in all those areas. But what it takes for an era to reach the target is time. That's what it takes. It takes time spent with your children. Proverbs 29, the latter part of verse 15 says, a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. And the first part of that says, the rod and rebuke give wisdom. May I suggest to us, as we think about the kind of legacy we want to leave our children, I realize we all live in a busy world. Every one of us is busy. But a child, the wise man said, a child left to himself should have parents who are ashamed of themselves. That's not what the wise man said, but that's the ultimate thing that the wise man meant. If you're going to have children, you're going to leave them to yourselves. What it says is that child will become ashamed to his mother because he's not had that kind of direction. He's not been aimed in that kind of direction. Let's just take a scenario. Let's say you sleep 8 hours. There's not a person over 25 probably in this audience or 30 that sleeps 8 hours a night. But let's assume for a minute that you do. And let's say that everybody in this audience who's an adult works 8 hours a day. That's 16 hours. And the last time I checked, there's 24 hours in a day. I'd call it discretionary hours. 8 hours. 8 hours that aren't designated. I got to sleep and I got to work. What about those other 8 hours? How are you going to spend those 8 hours? Let me suggest just a couple of things. Let me suggest that if you have children, let me suggest those other 8 hours be spent that you go home. And when you go home, before you go in, when you go home, you remind yourself that those things that bad that happened to you at work didn't happen and weren't the reason and weren't a result of anything that anybody at home did. Don't take that with you. Don't take that with you. And when you get home, don't allow anyone else to set your 8-hour home schedule. Don't allow somebody else to dictate how you're going to spend that time. Now, that's not to say that there may not be times when you have to do other things. But you be the one to dictate that. And then stay focused on your kids. Stay focused on your kids. A child left to himself will bring shame to his mother. That's the whole point, I think. A child left alone by either parent is going to bring shame. So what's the point of that? Don't leave them alone. I'm not saying be with them all the time. You'd go crazy and they would too. But the point to that is spend the kind of time focused on your kids. When they talk, listen and respond. Because I guarantee you this. You ready for this? I ought to get some amens on what I'm about to say. There's going to come a day when you'd give anything for your kids to come home and talk to you. Can I get an amen? That's what I'm talking about. So we better spend the time. We better spend the time. As a parent, do you know the name of your child's best friend? If your child had a free day, where would they go? Where would they tell you they want to go if they had a free day? Do you know the answer to that? You know the greatest pressure that your child faces? Do you know the greatest fear that your child faces? Do you know those things about your children? If you spend the time with them, you'll know those things. We've got to spend the time with them. That's part of our legacy that we'll leave that can never be taken away from us. That's something I remember that about my own parents. I valued them greatly, as all of you know, and I don't intend to talk about them all the time when I talk about parenting, but I had some good ones. And they spent some time with me. That's why when they can't spend any time with me anymore, it's going to be hard for me, just like it's hard for a lot of you. But spend time with your kids. Spend quality time with your kids. And then finally, release them prepared. It's time to let them go. Make sure they're prepared. God gives us about 18 years, and I'll tell you about that 18 years, it will fly by. I was looking at my Facebook account this week. I know those of you who are younger don't do Facebook anymore, but us old people, that's where we go. I saw all these mothers, some of you. I saw some of you. You're putting pictures of your kids up there. And they're all standing in a row and they're looking good and they got those good haircuts and they're holding placards and some of them say 4. Some of them say 1. Some of them say K. Some of them say 10. Some of them say 10 for the second time. No, they don't really do that. And you do that because you're taking a picture. You want a memory. They're telling you this is the grade that they were in and here's what they look like. But when it's time to let them go, you're going to have to let them go. And when you take that last picture while they're at your house, you need to take that picture, having looked at that picture later, and go, while I had them, I did the best I could. Now remember this. There are no perfect families. I know you're all going, whew. There are no perfect families. There are no perfect parents. There's no perfect father. There's no perfect mother. There's no perfect son. There's no perfect daughter. There is none. But my job as a parent is to give my absolute best every day. And if you'll give your absolute best every day, then when you leave this world and when you leave your kids behind, you will leave a legacy that is worth following. And I think that's what God wants. The good part is, as I said, there's nobody perfect at this business. You talk to me enough about my kids or talk to Beth and me, man, we've made a lot of mistakes. We have. We've done some things that I've wished terribly I could go back and change. Beth and I talk about it a lot. There are things that I wish I could go back and change. There are things she wishes she could go back and change. But we can't. But I think we made an effort, just like I think most of you have made a good effort. And that's what we try to do. I want this lesson this morning to not make you feel bad or badly about what you're doing. I want it to encourage you just to do better. That's the point. And wherever you are with this, just say from this point forward, I'm going to make some efforts to do a better job, to try to promote the kind of things in my children that are the most valuable. And that'll be something, I'm going to tell you something, that'll be something you never, ever will regret. It'll be something you'll cherish for the rest of your life. So I hope that the lesson's been valuable to you. If you have a spiritual need this morning that we can assist you with in any kind of way, you need to make your relationship with God what it ought to be. It may be that you can take care of that yourself. You need to do it, of course, the way the Bible would ask you to. If you've never become a Christian, you need to do that by being baptized into Christ. And we can help you with that. It may be that you're here this morning and you've rebelled against God, and a lot of folks know about that. And you need to make some public statement about that. We can help you with that. Or it may simply be that you need to have a conversation with God in which you say, I'm going to do better. Then you need to do that. But if we can help you with whatever it is that you need to do this morning, let that be known by coming forward as we stand, as